The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, a very good morning to you. It is just approaching 5 minutes past nine on this Thursday, the 7th of September 2023. How are you all keeping? Just as Donald was broadcasting the news there, maybe some good news for a few of you out there, because Electric Ireland, I think they're the biggest electricity supplier in the country, they have announced a 10% cut in residential electricity units rates. As I say, they released it just in a minute past nine there. That would equate to an average saving of €212.06 per annum. There's a 12% cut in gas prices as well, although I don't think gas is broadly used here. That would equate to a €216.67 saving per year. But anyway, €212 coming off your average bill if you are an Electric Ireland customer, they have just announced. You're welcome along to the show. The lines are open for you. WhatsApps and text to 086 60 25,000, or you can give us a call on 074 91 25,000. And emails come into us at comments at highlandradio.com. It's me, Greg Hughes, and the team of Donna Marie and Niamh taking your calls. Okay, let's run through what's making the front pages and inside some of the pages this Thursday morning. We'll start with the Tyrconnell Tribune. John McAteer writes that as concerns grow that numbers of serving personnel in the Irish Coast Guard helicopter service face the prospect of an interview process that will not guarantee their positions when the current contract ends, Deputy Padraig McLaughlin said, "This is an issue that must urgently be addressed because it's one of the most vital emergency services in the country." McLaughlin, Sinn Féin spokesperson for Fisheries and the Marine, said he was shocked to learn that anyone among the 140 strong staff employed in the service could lose their jobs or cuts in wages and conditions. The Donegal News has the story of a Letterkenny family who have been left devastated after a fire caused almost €20,000 worth of damage to their business at the weekend. The O'Donnell family, who run Adventure One Surf School in Rathmullen and Fannad, were notified in the early hours of Sunday morning with the news that their storage container had been burnt down. Located in Glass and Creasla, the storage container was used to store their stand-up paddle boards, around 100 wetsuits and surfboards. And we were chatting to Anna O'Donnell yesterday, and she was very keen with anyone with any information as to how that fire started to make that information available to the Gardaí. Right now, let's go to the Donegal Democrat, and an inquest into Jasmine McMonagall's death is the information here, the headline, sorry. An inquest into the death of mother of two, Jasmine McMonagall, has been scheduled for Friday. The 28-year-old hairdresser was found dead at her home at Forest Park, Killygordon, in the early hours of January 4th, 2019. Donegal coroner Dr. Dennis McCauley has listed the inquest for the upcoming coroner's court in Donegal Town. In May, Richard Burke, Miss McMonagall's on and off partner, was jailed for 14 years for her killing. In March, a jury at the Central Criminal Courts returned a verdict of not guilty of murder, but guilty of manslaughter by reason of diminished responsibility. Miss McMonagall was found in a pool of blood in the kitchen of her home following a 3-hour standoff between Burke and Gardaí. And it just must be so incredibly difficult for families affected by these tragedies and the various stages they have to go through. And hopefully now, once this inquest is concluded, and if it's a satisfactory outcome for the family, they can begin to move forward. The Derry News this morning, €50,000 worth of drugs seized. Police in Derry have seized suspected drugs with an estimated street value of €50,000 in the Carnhill area of the city. Ballyarnert neighbourhood policing team officers were on patrol in the area on Sunday afternoon, shortly after 4 p.m. when they observed a car being driven in a suspicious manner. The car came to a stop in the Carnhill area, and the two occupants got out of the car, walked away, and did not return to it. A subsequent search of the vehicle located a bag inside it containing a quantity of white substance suspected to be cocaine. On to the Nationals now, and another RTE story, RTE back across the front pages and inside many of the pages today. RTE staff were shocked that top executives' pay rose by 10% last year. which is shocking, isn't it? But what's extra shocking is that they got that pay rise while the broadcaster recorded a 2.8 million euro deficit. So in other words, they spent 2.8 million euro more than they took in. The former executive team took a 10% pay cut in 2020, but this was reversed from the end of August last year. An RTE spokesperson said the pay reduction had been an interim cost-cutting measure, but some staff at the broadcaster who did not want to be named said they were unaware the executive pay cut was temporary. Seamus Dooley, Irish Secretary of the National Union of Journalists, said the 10% pay cut was not presented as a temporary reduction. He said many staff would be surprised to learn that the cut had been reversed. It was announced by management and was not a quid pro quo for the acceptance of pay cuts by staff, he said. As I say, it is an organisation that is incredibly, incredibly heavily in debt. And you have an executive board who take 10% pay rises whilst running a deficit and then come to the taxpayer once again with the handout saying, we're short on money, you're going to have to bail us out. It'll be interesting to see if the government does so in the budget. I imagine they will, because RTE is projected to lose 21 million euro in licence fees because so many of you are saying, enough is enough, I'm not paying it. And that fall off continues. On to the Irish Times now, and a difficult day yesterday and today and into the future for those who lost loved ones during the Troubles, because the UK government's controversial legacy legislation to, as they see it, draw a line under the North's Troubles is set to become law after it passed a final vote in Westminster yesterday. MPs in the Commons voted by 288 to 205 to reject amendments introduced in the House of Lords on Tuesday, which would have altered the conditions required for a perpetrator to receive immunity from prosecution and included consent from victims' families. The bill will now return to the Lords next week, but parliamentary convention means it's unlikely to be opposed and will instead proceed to receive royal assent and become law. Michael O'Hare, whose 12-year-old sister Magella was shot dead by a British soldier in County Armagh in 1976, said the UK government had abandoned victims in favour of protecting those who took the lives of our loved ones. And, you know, what kind of a nation is it that would turn their back on victims like this to effectively say their murders don't matter? And the majority of people who lost their lives, or at least a significant proportion of them, weren't associated with any organisation. They weren't part of an armed conflict themselves, or whatever you may want, however they may want to frame it. They were victims, and their families have been fighting for justice, and now this means that they'll never get that justice. And it's going to be challenged, of course. And it's only two groups of individuals that seem to want that to happen. Former army personnel, some of them, not all, the majority I'd imagine, and the Tories. Everybody else is dead set against it. On to the Irish Farmers Journal now, and this is a big news story for rural Ireland, because the land rental market is facing massive disruption as a result of Ireland's nitrates derogation being cut from 250 kilograms of organic nitrogen per hectare to 222. The move is likely to result in cattle, sheep and tillage farmers who are leasing land seeing more intense competition for land from the dairy sector. So they have to have, if they want to maintain their current the flocks or herds, they have to increase the amount of land they have to offset that. So that obviously, you either reduce your herd or you try and get more land, which obviously has it's not a win-win anyway. It's almost like a lose-lose. Higher stocked farms in derogations have less than 4 months to reduce stock numbers or lease more land. However, all farmers across the country are set to be impacted by the move. Estimates suggest that almost 30,000 hectare are needed in the dairy sector alone to maintain current stocking levels. The derogation cut, which comes into effect on the 1st of January 2024, was confirmed following a virtual meeting between Minister for Agriculture Charlie McConnellogue and the European Commission this week. And it seems really almost unbelievable from someone outside the sector. It seems almost unbelievable that such a big decision that could have a catastrophic effect on so many was decided after a Zoom call on Monday, however long that lasted. It's a peculiar one, isn't it? If you're in farming, we'll be getting reaction, of course, from those who represent farmers, but I'd be very keen to speak to actual farmers themselves. So if you have a say on that, 086 60 25,000 or 07 491 25,000. Maybe you are a farmer and you can, you've digested this information and you can give us an indication as to how it might impact you or what it means for you. But as I say, it's a story we'll return to later on in the show. The Sun tells us that the Taoiseachs defended the government's approach to the budget yesterday after a critical assessment by a money watchdog. The Irish Fiscal Advisory Council warned ministers not to repeat past mistakes as it argued a large budgetary package is not needed this year. Ministers plan a 6.4 billion euro spree. That's a 6.1% increase in core spending. But the IFAC expressed concerns over the government plan to again breach its own spending rule, not to increase core spending by more than 5%. The IFAC said the economy is an unusually strong position and should not be stimulated further in budget 2024. But the problem is it's in an unusual strong position for a small group of people. And what IFAC want is effectively those of us who are already struggling or are on the brink to struggle more to drive down inflation. Yet at the same time, there are, we're not seeing it. I mean, the economy's in great shape, but it's a small group of people, probably the top 5% that are making a ton of money, or companies that are making a ton of money. The rest of us are wondering how we're going to pay basic commodities, how we're going to fill the oil tank for the winter, and so on and so forth. So the Irish Daily Mirror, Ireland needs a means-tested child benefit system to take more than 40,000 children out of poverty, it's been claimed. It would help 100,000 households and cost 700 million a year, the Economic and Social Research Institute said ahead of next month's budget. It's called for the overhaul of the child benefit system by introducing the means-tested or second-tier approach. A spokesperson for the independent think tank said child poverty would be reduced by a quarter, equivalent to taking over 40,000 children out of poverty. Here's one. Let's try and take all children out of poverty. Wouldn't that be amazing? Instead of proposals that reduce child poverty by and it's worth Googling what poverty is for a child. But anyway, 40,000 children, they say these measures could take out of poverty. Such a reform would provide all households containing children with a payment determined by their means and number of children. We estimate that introducing this payment would cost around 700 million euro per year. It would benefit more than 100,000 households and reduce the share of children below the poverty line by a quarter. A second tier of child benefit is far more effective at reducing child poverty. So they're not saying effectively take it off the rich, so there'd be a base rate, and then if you were means tested and needed more, there'd be a second payment on top of that. There's lots of people who probably don't need child benefit that are receiving it. Would you be in favour of it being means tested and maybe it focused on going to those that need it most? Or do you think the status quo should be maintained? 086 again, 60,000, 25,000. How do you sleep? Do you sleep well? Do you get a good night's sleep most nights? Do you find it hard to get off to sleep and then you wake up tired? Well, just one in seven people manages to fall asleep as soon as their head hits the pillow, but a fifth are ceiling watchers who can't nod off, according to a study. Other bedtime habits are the late-night scrollers checking their phones in bed. There are more people who suffer sleep problems than the lucky Out Like a Light tribe who nod off within minutes, a survey of 1,000 people in Ireland found. So which are you? Are you an Out Like a Light? 13% just fall asleep straight away without any difficulty at all. Then there's the ceiling watcher. That makes up one in five of us. Really struggle to relax and fall asleep within a reasonable amount of time after going to bed. Or are you a clock watcher? You wake up several times during the night to see what time it is. I can wake up, and this is no joke, wake up and tell you pretty much within 5 minutes what the time is. I couldn't have, and it's weird. I don't know how I do it, but I genuinely can do that. And I wake up at different times as well. Or are you a late night scroller? This is a third of us. You scroll through social media right up until you doze off. I think a lot of people do that and they wait till the eyes are just about to close and then they say, right, I'm going to go to sleep now. What about a dancer? Toes, tosses and turns and wriggles around in bed during the night without meaning to. One in 10 of us do that. Me firsts like to be first to bed before the partner has made their way up. 8% of us do that, which means the majority of people in a relationship go to bed with their partner. Or are you a snacker? You like to snack all the way up to bedtime. And if you get hungry, even after going to bed, you'll pop back up to the kitchen for more. Only 5% of us are inclined to do that. So the majority are. The majority of people don't go to sleep out like you like. They're 1 in 10. All right, okay. Which one of those are you? Bettina joins us on the programme now. Good morning to you. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Craig.
We're back talking about a real jewel in the crown. That's no exaggeration. That is beautiful green on Avalia. But unfortunately, once again, we're talking about access and the lack thereof.
Yes. They recently reinstalled the gate at the green, which has been gone for nearly 3 years. And they locked it again, which means that in the future, if it's allowed to stay locked at night and being locked in the evening and going by the opening hours posted at the foot of the hill at the barrier, no one will ever be able to see a sunrise from the top of the green or a sunset, because the opening hours are such that they, during the entire year, exclude sunrises and sunset, and particularly the sunsets, as I've seen last Monday, are so frequented and are such a great favor for the people in the neighborhood. I was last June on the hills to the east of the Greenen to photograph the sun setting inside the Greenen. And as I got home and looked at my photo, I could see all those little, what I call pinheads at the monument. And I've never seen that many people visiting the monument at sunset before like this. They were standing shoulder to shoulder. There was not a gap between them. And I was absolutely amazed and delighted to see that. The Greenland is such a much loved and much cherished and much frequented monument. People go there all times in the morning, during the day, in the evening, even at night, stargazers go there. The Milky Way, in the Milky Way season, basically runs across the monument. And there are photos online. One of the photos is by my friend Adam Porter, where the Milky Way is actually coming straight out of the Greenen. And you have those most beautiful sunrises. Now the upcoming equinox alignment will actually see people from all over the world coming to see this alignment. And I'm absolutely taken aside by pride that they come and the gate will be closed.
Well, Bettina, on the news this morning, and sometimes we have to put ourselves in the mind of tourists and decision makers. So on the news this morning, we're hearing from a local councillor who's saying that Inishowen is struggling because of a lack of tourists, that it wasn't a brilliant summer and they're going to struggle heading into the winter, okay? Now, I'm a tourist and I'm coming to Donegal, and on a list of things I might want to do is go to on Greenan of Alia. I've seen the pictures of the sunsets and the beautiful things that you talk of. And I'll go, right, okay, so what we'll do is we'll go there at such and such a time and we'll get the sunrise or the sunset. And you plan it and you go there, and at the bottom of this beautiful monument, as you describe it, there's a sign saying it's closed at 7 o'clock in the evening, or it's not open until 9 a.m. And then we wonder why, maybe our tourism numbers are taking a hit. I'm not linking these two things, but logic has to say this is crazy.
Yeah, but, general knowledge is that it's only the barrier at the foot of the hill, which means you can't drive up with the car to the car park. But the monument itself was open. You know, it was accessible. It has been accessible for 10 years, with the one exception during the lockdown in 2020, as they put in a gate, which was very short-lived because someone came with an angle grinder and removed it. So the Greenland ever since was gateless again and open to everyone, as it has been for a very, very long time. And visitors know that because they see the photos on Facebook, online, wherever they go, Twitter, and the photos have been around for a long time. And I go there every equinox, and I never encountered a problem with someone saying, I wasn't sure if the monument was open or not.
Yeah, okay. Stay where you are. Councillor Jack Murray joins us now. Another head scratcher, Councillor Murray. This doesn't make any sense.
No, I'm absolutely raging about this. And once I saw it flagged on social media, just stunned. It's the difference between a visitor coming up, getting spectacular photos of Green Navalia on one of the nicest days of the year, putting it up to promote to all their friends and family and followers on Facebook from wherever they might be in the world. That could have been the experience. Instead, it'll be a very, very bad memory, leave a very bad taste in their mouth as they head home. And they'll be telling people that when they came down the show, they went to the spectacular site and couldn't get into it. And they'd be dumbfounded by that. And I think it's indicative of a long-running intent by the OPW to keep people away from Greenan and to not meet us in any way halfway in promoting what I think is the most spectacular site in Donegal. It's now 6 years since we met with the OPW. We've been requesting meetings at almost every meeting of the initial municipal district to meet us and discuss the potential of greening. Issues like this here, that we could have raised the concerns of the community about this, but they've resisted it for 6 years now. Thankfully, Paddy McLaughlin had written to the minister on this, and they've agreed to the meeting. Now, they haven't set a date, but it was confirmed at Tuesday's meeting of the initial municipal district that they're going to meet us, and I hope now all nine initial councillors are going to come in and forcefully tell them how bad a decision this was, how angry people in our community were, and all those who want to promote Inishowen, all those who love Greenan and want to show it off the world, how annoyed everybody is about this absolutely terrible decision.
Has the OPW, even though they've refused to meet, given a reason for restricting access like they have?
They've given no information whatsoever. This was a completely unilateral decision with no consultation that I'm aware of with the local authority, with the local community, with local businesses, tourism providers. The first, I think, anybody became aware of it when it was published on social media, that visitors were locked outside Green Navalia and couldn't get into Witnesses on Set. Now, they couldn't have handled this any worse than what they've done. To leave people up there stranded. So rather than this, as I said, the spectacular photos that their friends can see on social media, they're going to see bad reviews, they're going to see people angry and having a very disappointing trip to what should be a hugely, hugely enjoyable and memorable lifetime experience for those people who mightn't get a chance to come back to Donegal again.
Yeah, I mean, Betna, you would echo all of those points, I'm sure, as the original raiser of this issue with us.
Yeah, but there might be a possible explanation. The OPW probably will be saying is protecting the monument from acts of vandalism. There was one 6 or 7 years ago where a group of Derry people stayed overnight, drinking, taking God knows what, and in the morning they threw stones at the arriving visitors, which was very bad.
Yeah, but I mean, obviously, I don't know the ins and outs of that case, but you know, I'm sure there are similar challenges in Kerry, Cork, other parts of the solution is not because you might have one, two, or even five situations. The solution is not that you shut off access for everybody. I mean, if that is the reason that they give, it's not going to be fantastic.
I wasn't quite finished.
Well, continue now then.
Sorry, I wasn't quite finished. Yeah, no. Until recently, the Greenan had a gatekeeper, a wonderful woman. She was an employee of the OPW, and she always made sure for 20 years that, if possible, the gate was open, particularly ever since the so-called repair work stopped in 2008. And she recently retired. And She lived actually below the hill. She knew exactly how people frequented and loved that monument and what happened. And she was one of the people who also embraced the monument. And she is now gone, and the OPW has not chosen to employ someone from their own organization. Instead, they have hired a private company. This is very new. That never had happened before. And, of course, their excuse is the danger of vandalism, and maybe this new company, private company, takes it a touch too serious, maybe under instruction of the OPW. I do not know. But The thing is that with the exception of this one incident 6 or 7 years ago, and particularly the last 3 years where the Greenland had no gate none whatsoever, there was not a single incident of vandalism at the Greenland at all. It's been actually more visitors, as I said before, particularly for the sunsets. And in my opinion, the argument the OPW might make with the danger of vandalism is flawed, because in my experience, a very well-visited monument is less in danger of being vandalized, because there are people there in the evening, at night and in the morning.
Yeah, that's a decent point.
And therefore, it won't be targeted. You know, if the Greenland is left in the dark for the entire night, and I tried at my age, and I'm able to climb nearly into the monument, even with the gate closed. I have seen young people climbing in over the wall. So, you know, they still can get in the monument and vandalize it if they so wish. The danger is if the monument is left alone and unvisited, this increases so many times more than if the monument is left open and people can come and go.
Okay, what do you see as the solution, Councillor Murray?
I agree with everything that's been said there, but everybody wants to protect Greenland Isle. Nobody in the local community who wants to promote it wants to see it in any way damaged or vandalised and needs to protect from that. But to just shut it off from people coming up to take photos of sunset is not the way to go. Like, I would have been on your show over the last number of years saying we should have like a secure or a tour guide up there, which would enhance the visitor experience for others, but it would also have a full-time member of staff there to keep an eye on it. Like the OPW haven't even countenanced that.
If they undertake that means really effectively two or three staff, because with holidays and all that kind of stuff, you know, it's not just one person's wage and try and recoup that. You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying what you're saying is wrong, but you
of course,
know,
yeah.
They come back and say, well, it's actually three people that's needed.
Yeah, and so be it. Look, if that's necessary, Greenland is not the only ancient site in Ireland, but it's one of the few that I know that is shut it down, try and keep people away. Others, they embrace the potential of the site and they invest in it. And so be it, if it's three members of staff, so be it. Like, their sites, like, and we talk, like, they don't want huge crowds because it could be damaged, but when people visit, it can be maintained. If we do it right, and if we want to simultaneously maintain it, protect it, and promote it, it can be done. Like, I was in Sicily about 3 years ago, and I was at a concert in the ancient Greek theater there, a ruined theater, and they had a concert there because they showed it off to the world. They protected it, and it was a spectacular experience. So if they can do something like that, now I'm not saying Greenland should do something like that, but we can welcome visitors up to take photos at night. Look, we're not looking at anything huge. We're not looking at thousands of people there, but we just don't want it shut off entirely, which is really what the OPW have done. They haven't engaged, they haven't helped in the journey to promote it as a tourism entity at all. They've just decided, turn people away, keep people away, and hopefully nobody will ever come near Greenland and that'll protect it. And I think that's completely the wrong way to go about it. And it's going against all the wishes of the local community, the local businesses, everybody in the area who are outraged this morning that this has happened.
I mean, there has to be a way to source people locally that could take this responsibility. I mean, it has to happen elsewhere. It can't be beyond us. But no, we never know, too. We won't know how many people end up being disappointed until we see the reviews on social media or wherever. But you did come across people when you were up there who were disappointed. What was that like?
You could see the frustration and the disappointment on their faces. They were nearly heartbroken. As I was there on Monday evening, there was one young couple. They came up with a picnic basket and a blanket, and it looked like they were going to celebrate something.
Well, maybe he had a ring. Maybe he had a ring in his pocket.
That is possible, Craig. That happened before, you know. And they were heartbroken. You know, they were very quietly settled then outside the monument, facing the sunrise in a little corner. And it was, you know, it was so sad to see. And then more people came up, and they couldn't believe. You know, they saw the closed gate. It took a moment to sink in that the gate was actually closed and they couldn't get in. And it was only very fortunate that the man from the private company came back for a biker who was left on the hill. Mrs. Bike. And then I basically begged him if he could open the gate, and he did. And the relief, you nearly could feel the relief, you know. And for the entire evening, people kept streaming in. I left the 8:45. The sun had long set, and people still came up the hill, you know. And I have a couple of photos with people sitting there. There was a biker beside me. As we finally got inside, he was from England, and he had a flask and sandwiches, you know. So people celebrate.
Okay. Thank you very much, Bettina, for raising and help us raise the issue here. I do appreciate it, and good morning to you. And finally, Councillor Jack Morey, am I right in saying that people could find themselves having to park, walk up, and then discover the gates closed? You know, so it's actually the effort involved as well. Is that a probable scenario?
That's absolutely the case. And right. As Bettina was speaking there, I actually proposed to my wife in Greenan at about 7 o'clock in the morning. So if I had went to do that today, it wouldn't happen. So
I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to say it. Could have saved her 7 years. No, not at all.
I didn't actually know that.
It's a probable situation, and you're a case in point, Jack, that someone could choose to do that. So when is this meeting with the OPW? And I know all of the cross-party, no-party councillors will all be on board here in this meeting with the OPW. There's no doubt about that.
Absolutely. Now, that's the thing. They finally agreed to the meeting after 6 years but haven't set a date. So that's the frustrating point of it. And they've only done so because Paddy McLaughlin had written to the minister on that. They've indicated at the last Dinnishaw Municipal District meeting that they will come back to us with a date. It's frustrating. It's been 6 years waiting for it, but I would hope that at this point now they will have this meeting, and the 9 initial councillors of all parties and none are agreed on this, and we'll be going in this on a united front for the better of everybody, because you're speaking on behalf of everybody in the community who just wants to see Greenan protected for future generations, but wants it to be promoted and enjoyed by people from every corner of the world who comes and comes to this part of Donegal, so they can go back and tell their friends what a magical place it is.
All right, thank you very much indeed for that, Councillor Jack Morey. I think is it Doreen I have with me on the line? No.
Hey there.
Hi, I've got your name correct, have I?
Yeah.
Okay, good, sorry. You live close to on Green On. What's your take on this, Doreen?
Well, I would go walking past there a lot of nights, you know, between 6 and 8. Sometimes even later, it's getting dark now, but there will be a lot of people still visiting at that time of night, and a lot of people, you know, still going up to visit the monument. I just think it's sad that they can't, or that they're climbing the outside of it to still see the inside. I think that's dangerous. I think that the gates should be left open. The bottom gates, I can understand why they're closed at a certain time, but I do think people should have the option to be able to still go inside.
And you're saying it's actually more dangerous, more risk of damage to property or health by having the gate closed, because people will walk up and they'll say, well, I want to get in here by hook or by crook.
Yeah, and you can climb up the outside of the monument. Yeah. To get into the inside, even if the gate is locked or not. So it's probably more dangerous to lock the gate than to leave it open. I can understand the bottom gates being locked, but I can't understand the inside gate being locked. I think you have more chance of vandalism by doing that.
Okay.
All through COVID, there was no gates, and you know, there was no vandalism. So I don't know where their argument is now to just go ahead and put a gate up.
The problem is we can't make a, we can't get a comment from them. The councillors can't get a meeting of them. They seem to be alluring to themselves on this issue. But thanks so much, Doreen, for your local insight. And I really do appreciate it. And have a lovely day. Thanks to Jack and Doreen and Bettina there. Back with more after the break. So the Agriculture Minister will meet with farming leaders today after the EU announced new nitrogen limits. The decision announced by the European Commission yesterday is set to affect around 3,000 Irish dairy farmers from the new year. It could see them either having to reduce their herds or secure more land if they want to continue operating at their current capacity. This, as you can imagine, is the front page of today's Irish Farmers Journal. And we're joined now by the Deputy News Editor, Barry Murphy. Barry, thanks for your time today. I do appreciate it. Is this expected?
Morning, Greg. Thanks for having us. Look, it's what from Minister Tierney McConlogue's perspective, he has said it is expected and it has been flagged, and farmers have a sight of this change. While it may be unwelcome that they've known it's been coming, but it does leave farmers now who have been directly impacted. So about 3,000 of them who operate that 250 to 220 upper nitrogen derogation limit. So about 3,000 across the country. They now have less than 4 months until the 1st of January 2024. As you said, reduce stock numbers or acquire more land. The vast, vast majority of those farmers are dairy farmers. It's worth pointing out that they're not all, say, your 200 cow dairy farmers. Some of them are, you know, farmers with 70 cows who now are looking having to cut back to maybe 45, 50 cows, and that will have a serious impact on their farm income. But it's going to impact all farms as well, because if they are seeking to maintain their stock numbers, we've estimated that it will require almost 30,000 hectares of additional land, and that land will have to be, I suppose it'll add to demand for the overall rental sector in terms of land, competing with farmers in the beef, tillage and sheep sectors as well, who are lower income and maybe outbid by that kind of higher income dairy farmers. So serious ramifications for the farm sector. And a lot of farmers seeing the news and realising the news there yesterday and this morning will say, look, it's a major headache at the moment.
And will this squeeze out then more likely the smaller farmer?
You could say that, Greg. You know, there's a number of older dairy farmers, older dairy farmers we've been speaking to, and they're saying, well, you know, I've operated at 60, 70 cows for the last good many years. I haven't driven on in terms of, you know, output to 150 or 200 cows. And I'm now being asked to cut back to kind of the 40, 50 level. And, you know, farmers who have made borrowings or who could be entering farm partnership, for example, are now in serious difficulty. They may have gone to their bank and said, look, I'll be milking 70 cows for the next 5 years. I'll make X output, you know, and this is why I can afford to repay a loan. And are now going back saying, well, actually, now I only have 50, and they might have borrowed for sheds, steel and cement, but also farm partnership agreements, farm succession. It causes headaches in all those areas with IFAC's Philip O'Connor yesterday saying, you know, there's so much in this yet to be worked out in terms of the financial ramifications for those smaller farmers. But on the kind of the up your part of the country, sheep and beef farmers, smaller farmers, they'll now be facing increased demand for any land that they do rent as well.
And I mean, you know, some will argue, well, this is not about reducing the national herd, but at the very least, it feels like a consolidation of these areas, because obviously those bigger, more resourced, perhaps better equipped to absorb this or buy people out or acquire their land. You know, are we seeing, either by stealth or right before our eyes, really a consolidation of dairy and other agricultural practices?
You could describe it as that, Greg. You used the word stealth there, and farm organisations have kind of described this as a cull by stealth. So, you know, it's not forcing farmers to cut or to cull cows, but by stealth, you could say the nitrates derogation changes will do that over time. It's actually not that quite long in terms of period of time. They only have now until the 1st of January, so less than 4 months. And, you know, look, the farm organisations, while they've had sight of this for a good many months now, and they could, I suppose you could say, have seen it coming, the minister's saying there's nothing he can do. It's a decision by the
Well, just in relation to that, I mean, is there nothing that can be done? I mean, we can lobby, surely. I mean, is it unusual for a decision like this, of such a scale to impact so many, is made off the back of a video call?
Yeah, so look, I understand Minister McConlogue, he's your local TD in Donegal, and look, you know, in fairness to the minister, he has said he has, you know, represented Ireland's case as best he possibly can. He's outlined Ireland, Irish farming's green credentials, you know, that it's grass-based system and so on. But, you know, he has, I suppose, lost on this one. He has presented it as a problem of Brussels and of himself. You know, it's a them problem, not me. That, you know, he's highlighted that the derogation in general, so the next notch on it, Greg, goes from the 220 to the 170 units of organic nitrogen, and it is all to do with the level of stock you have on your land per hectare. And he's saying that that now is the task at hand, to maintain it at that level. And he's highlighted that Ireland is only one of three countries that operates with a derogation at all. So, you know, when other EU member states are looking at us, they're saying, well, why are Irish farmers allowed to operate at higher stocking levels? So look, I saw an interesting comparison that was made yesterday. You know, it's like looking at, say, the Audi and the car producers of Germany, for example, and saying you've been operating at a certain level for the last many years, and now we're going to make you cut back. You know, Ireland's the dairy industry in particular is Ireland's.
But that's not a derogation. But I presume there's derogations in different areas. I mean, this is our, you know, one of our key areas. So whilst our derogation might be in agriculture, another could be in car production, or it could be in fruit production, or whatever it might be. I don't know the ins and outs of it. But I mean, just because we're one of three, when we see the hit we're taking in fishing as well, and other areas, I still think most people will feel that we're entitled to it. And the pressures now this puts on land rental, land availability, particularly maybe up in our part of the world here, is it just affecting the farming community, or does that have ripple effects beyond?
I'd say for the most part affecting the farming community, it'll be increased demand for agricultural land, Greg. But I suppose you could imagine there being ripple effects, you know, in terms of site prices. If rental land is able to acquire a certain level, and a farmer who's saying, maybe I'm not going to farm it, I'll rent it out because I'll get, you know, a nice amount for it. He or she is therefore maybe not going to sell as many sites off it or that kind of thing. So increased demand for the land market in general, like I can see, look, having some ramifications for the general public as well, or anyone else looking to acquire land. But for the most part, it'll be hitting farmers, and it'll be hitting them quite quickly. As I said, just over the next 4 months, the farm organizations are protesting this morning. The IFA is leading a picket in Dublin at a meeting that the minister has called to basically sit down with the farm organizations and run through the detail of this and the decision and how it was made. And it's immediately going to have that kind of that impact. Look, the IFA has described it as, you know, having major ramifications for the land markets. The Irish Creamy Milk Suppliers Association said it's the nail in the coffin for Irish family farms. So quite serious objections to the changes, you know, and it's the real impact of it's not going to be seen for quite some time.
There would have been no point travelling to Brussels to try and get a face-to-face meeting, would there not? And perhaps even maybe those in the farming community might have said, all right, okay, well, you know, what's done is done. But do you think the fact that it seems that this the final throw of the dice was over a Zoom or meets or whatever type of call it might be is going to further anger farmers, or is that irrelevant really in the wider scale of things?
I think the minister might say it is irrelevant, but I think for farmers it is relevant. They would have liked him to make sure that he was there in person, maybe to fight it till the last hurrah. Kind of, you know, I saw Colin Markey, MEP, was out yesterday criticising the minister for conducting that meeting over Zoom or online. Look, I imagine the minister has lots of engagements, but probably disappointing from farmers' perspective that he didn't get out there and kind of really meet in person with the Environment Commissioner. The minister would say, though, that this has been coming. It goes right back to you reported on it as well, Greg. I think I might have spoken to you on it. You know, a report was submitted from the Department of Agriculture to the Commission, including water quality data that had been gathered by the Environmental Protection Agency. And that produced this thing called the water quality map, or this red map that included large swathes of Ireland that will now fall under the derogation change. There were some blocks left out down in the southeast in parts of Cork and up kind of your part of the country as well. And those lands now, you know, we don't know when, but they will also be pulled in under this as well. And once that water quality data is gathered, so it's only going to get worse rather than better, I think, for the moment. You know, look, it's going to impact mostly farmers in the southeast and down kind of Cork, Tipperary, Limerick, kind of the larger dairy parts of the country. But nonetheless, there are farmers who will be impacted up in Donegal and Cavan as well.
Yeah, and I suppose to some extent the IFA may roll over on this, and those are my words, not yours, and really focus on the window.
You could say, you know, that they'd last for more time. They asked the Taoiseach to intervene, for example, yesterday as well. The Irish Farmers Association did, and Taoiseach Leo Varadkar, look, it's maybe an easy thing for him to say as well, but, you know, look, we are where we are. It's gone from 250 to 220, the task at hand. Then over to Minister McConlogue for this one. He said it's to stick with that 220 now and maintain it. You know, so the minister, it's a difficult task to maintain the derogation. And he's continuously outlined that Ireland's just one of three. But nonetheless, farmers maybe aren't going to lap that up just as he might like. They're seeing it as a failure on his behalf, a quite heavy criticism from farm organizations yesterday and this morning. In relation to the minister's performance on the matter.
Okay, Barry Murphy, deputy news editor of the Farmers Journal, which is out today. Thank you very much indeed for your time. Back after the news and obituary notices.